The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Morning glory, America. Bonjour, hi, Canada. Hugh Hewitt inside the Beltway. 22 days of the election, Donald Trump back on the campaign trail. It really is kind of amazing that he was in Walter Reed 8 days ago, and he did a rally last night that was as extraordinary as any of the rallies of 2016, which stunned and amazed most people. I'll play a lot of that in a minute. Just know his energy is like it's remarkable. It just is remarkable. Meanwhile, Joe Biden had perhaps the worst day on the campaign trail, which I'll play for you in a second. But I want to begin with Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell, who had his one debate with Amy McGrath last night, the Democrat Bobo doll they sent up to be against her. And she's a Marine, which she told you a million times, and that's great. I respect her service. I'm a civilian. I always say that. But, man, don't go into a fight with Mitch McConnell unless you are prepared to actually lose. If you're doing this for the good of the party, fine, Amy McGrath, I salute you for it. But, okay, here's cut 28, Mitch McConnell taking her apart on policy grounds.
Well, what she supported after the CARES Act was the so-called Heroes Bill over in the House, $3 trillion, and which included in it, by the way, tax cuts for rich people in New York and California, health care for illegal immigrants. And by the way, that bill that she supported that they passed in the House after the CARES Act provided more money for Puerto Rico than it did for Kentucky. In spite of her best efforts, she's a national Democrat. She is in line with Schumer and Pelosi and all the rest on all of these issues.
No, she is. And she's going to vote for Chuck Schumer. Mitch McConnell then lays down this, cut 29.
My opponent said she's the most progressive person in Kentucky. What does that mean? That means they want to stack the Supreme Court. In other words, add numbers so they can get an outcome that they like. She wants to make the District of Columbia a state, Puerto Rico a state, get rid of the filibuster in the Senate. In short, there's not a dime's worth of difference between my opponent and all of the national Democrats that you've watched. If you give them control of the government, that's what they'll do.
Yeah, Mitch was just, that's all you need. Well, one more cut. Cut number 30, because she asked him ridiculous question after ridiculous question. Here is the last thing I'll play from Mitch last night, 30.
I'll give you a few seconds, Senator, if you want to respond to that. That was a little bit out of order in time.
You mean to her ridiculous comment?
Yes.
No.
All right. We'll move on.
Mitch McConnell. I know I'm on Louisville, Lexington, throughout the Bluegrass State. I know I got a great Kentucky audience. You have the best senator going, the guy who runs the Senate. He's the master of the Senate. He saved the Constitution 4 times. And you got to send him back because Kentucky's not stupid. But it's fun to watch. Anyway, over at HughHewitt.com, I have listed links to every one of the Senate campaigns that can use your contribution. Now, if you want to be strategic, trust me on this, if you want to be strategic and you're a Republican, you go to and give money to the Senate Leadership Fund, because that's where the quarterback is. Mitch runs that. The Senate Leadership Fund deploys resources wherever they're needed. There's a counterpart on the Democratic side as well, Chuck Schumer's fund. But Republicans go to the Leadership Fund. But whether you want to support Senator Susan Collins, who I think has climbed into the lead, Senator Tom Tillis, we don't have any good polling. We saw a stupid poll yesterday that said Cal Cunningham has increased his lead since his affair was revealed. That's just stupid. That's not true. So you can put that aside. Tom Tillis in North Carolina. Lindsey Graham is going to win. But I would like him to win by 10 points just to show Democrats they can't buy seats. His opponent has raised, I think, $53 million in the last quarter. Send Lindsey some money. Doing a great job at the Senate Judiciary Committee. Send Lindsey Graham some money. Joni Ernst in Iowa is back in the lead. Senator Cory Gardner, I don't think, is. But he's climbing. He's a great campaigner. There's a well of goodwill towards Cory Gardner out there. He's been one of Colorado's most relentless advocates. He helped pass the Great American Outdoors Act. And Senator Martha McSally, who is within, I think, a point now. Last survey I saw, she was down by 10 3 months ago, but she eviscerated Mark Kelly in the debate. And I think 700,000 Arizona voters saw that and said, OK, I'm giving money to Martha McSally. I'm going to help her out. I think she's in good shape. And I know the president is climbing in every national poll. I talked to two senators yesterday who are running, both of whom are confident, both of whom are feeling a lot better this week than they did last week when the president was in the hospital. The numbers were tanking. And since he's gotten out, every day it's gotten better. They do overnight polling and they don't get it wrong. They can't afford to get it wrong. Overnight polling, daily increases for the president and them since he got out of the hospital. That is key. Now, Joe Biden, on the other hand, had the worst day ever yesterday. First of all, the memory problem, cut number one.
As you may remember, I got in trouble when we were running against the senator who was a Mormon, the governor, okay? And I took him on.
The senator who was a Mormon, the governor. He can't remember Mitt Romney's name. Really? He can't remember Mitt Romney's name. Cut number two, he gets what he's running for wrong.
You know, we have to come together. That's why I'm running. I'm running as a proud Democrat for the Senate.
You know, he's not running as a proud Democrat for the Senate. He also told a joke last night. Well, I'll play it for you. This is Joe Biden in Cincinnati yesterday, cut number eight.
You know, there's an old joke a long time ago, a particular senator said to me, this is back when I was much younger, I was in my second term, running for my second term. He said, Joe, I'll come to Delaware for you and campaign for you or against you, whichever will help the most. My offer still holds. I hope my endorsement didn't hurt you. But all kidding aside.
Okay, that's not very funny. It's an old joke, but here's how he told it in 2012. It's only 8 years ago, cut number nine.
So as Jim Eastland said to me in 1978 when I was running for election, he said he never called me Senator or Joe. He didn't call me son. He always called me young man. And he said, young man? He said, what would Jim Eastland do for you in Delaware? And I was in a tough re-election. I said, well, I said, Mr. Chairman, some places you'd help and some places you'd hurt. And he looked at me, all kidding aside, in the Senate dining room with Herman Talmadge sitting there and said, well, I'll come to Delaware and campaign for you again, you son, whichever will help you the most.
Jim Eastland was a stone-cold racist segregationist. Stone-cold. So was Talmadge. Stone-cold racist segregationist. That was in 2012. Joe Biden knows to drop his name out, but doesn't know to stop telling the joke. It just is remarkable. Joe Biden then went to Toledo. Now, this is Ohio. Ohio is Trump country. And he says this, cut number 10.
Gallup reported last week 56% of Americans said that they were better off today than they were 4 years ago, would have been under the Obama-Biden administration. So why should people who feel that they are better off today under the Trump administration vote for you?
Well, if they think that, they probably shouldn't. They think 54% of American people are better off economically today than they were in our administration. Well, their memory is not very good, quite frankly.
So first insult the voters, but then tell everyone who answered Gallup, the best polling in the group, vote for him. He said 54, but it's 56%. So he just, you know, have a landslide against me. Then he went to Cincinnati, and he's confusing Ted Kennedy with Robert Byrd, cut number five.
When I first got elected to the United States Senate, I was 29. I was in Washington and interviewing for staff using Senator Kennedy's whip office. And I got a...
Kennedy was not the whip. He'd been ousted by Robert Byrd 2 years earlier than that. So that's a memory issue. This one is really strange. Cut number six in Toledo.
I read some stories after I got the nomination that, quote, if Biden gets elected, he'll be the first non-Ivy League school graduate to get elected in I think it was 80 or 90 years. Guys, have a seat, man. You know what? Like some state school guy went to the University of Delaware. I was proud of it. Hard to get there, hard to get through.
Apparently, they didn't teach history at the University of Delaware. Seven of the past 15 presidents don't have an Ivy League attachment. President Hoover, President Truman, Ike, Johnson, Nixon, Carter, and Reagan. No Ivy League. He said 80 years. He said it. So he's just making stuff up. There are no stories out there that say that. It's just pandering. Okay, finally, this one gets me. Cut number seven.
I went to Gettysburg, Pennsylvania, to the battlefield, where Abraham Lincoln told us that a house divided cannot stand.
All right, that offends me. It doesn't offend me. I just chuckle. Lincoln did not say that at Gettysburg. The Gettysburg Address is one of the shortest presidential addresses in history. It's on the wall of the Lincoln Memorial. It says nothing about the House Divided speech. The House Divided speech was given in pre-Civil War Illinois. It's just yesterday he was a train wreck. You know what they've done today? They've called a lid on the campaign. They really can't let him out of the basement. Not for a full day. Not unless they've got the questions planted. They cannot do it. He's a train wreck. We'll compare that with Donald Trump afterwards. And, of course, Amy Coney Barrett killed it yesterday. So did Ben Sasse. So did Josh Hawley. So did Mike Crapo. We'll play it all for you here on The Hugh Hewitt Show. Hi, Hugh Hewitt for ReliefFactor.com. If you are in pain and you want out of pain, well, you need to talk to the people that get it done. Pete and Seth Talbot, the father-son owners of ReliefFactor.com. They tell me that sometimes whole families can be helped when one member of the family gets out of pain. For example, finally, a married couple gets to sleep through the night again when one isn't tossing and turning with a terrible back. That's why Pete and Seth created the 3-week quick start, so you can find out if those people are you. For about $1 a day, you can see if you can get out of pain, and after that, lessen the cost of a cup of coffee a week to stay out of pain. The 3-week quick start is like a trial pack, and it can be at your door in about 2 to 3 days. Let's face it, getting older, exercise, even everyday living can create discomfort, pain. You don't order Relief Factor just for yourself. Order it for your wife, your husband, your family, your friends. They miss the old you, too. A 3-week quick start at ReliefFactor.com or call 800-500-8384. 800-500-8384. Welcome back, America. Hugh Hewitt. Speaking about coming close, Donald Trump made a joke last night. He said he could go out and hug everybody and kiss everybody. That tape is all botched up. Let's listen to the longer one. This is the president in Sanford, Florida last night. Cut 27.
Sleepy Joe Biden. Not a nice guy, by the way. I have to be honest. Not a nice guy. You know, people say, oh, he's such a nice guy. He had a very bad day today. He had a very bad day. You saw what happened. If I ever had a day like he had today, they'd say it's over. It's over. No, Biden had a bad day. He forgot Mitt Romney's name. He didn't know what state he was in. And he said today he's a proud Democrat running for the U.S. Senate. No, you can't do it. It's the second time. Can you imagine if I did that? It's great to be with you. It's great to be a wonderful developer from New York. They'd say, he's out of here. Get him out. Now, Biden had a bad day. He's got a lot of bad days coming. Look, look, we can't play games. The one thing I know for sure, President Xi of China did us no favor. President Putin of Russia, you're looking around. Kim Jong-un, whatever happened to the war we were supposed to be in with Kim Jong-un, right? Kim Jong-un, they're 100% sharp. We have somebody running who's not 100%. He's not 80%. He's not 60%. We can't have this as a country. We can't have it. Joe Biden is also owned by the radical globalists, the wealthy donors, the big money special interests who shipped away your jobs, shut down your factories, threw open your borders, and ravaged our cities while sacrificing American blood and treasure in this ridiculous, endless wars, set of endless wars that we've been in for a long time, 19 years. They're all coming back home. You know that, right? They're all coming back home, our great warriors, our great soldiers. The corrupt political class is desperate to regain their power by any means necessary. We're the ones standing in their way. We're the ones standing up for the American worker, the American family, and for the American dream. And that's what we're doing on this beautiful evening.
I got to tell you, the crowd around the president is amazing and energized. And as I've been reading Rick Gates's book, Wicked Game, he's going to be on tomorrow, former deputy campaign manager of the Trump campaign who got indicted by Mueller and was no part of any Russian conspiracy, but I'll tell you about that tomorrow when he's on. But he's talking about the campaign of 2016. These rallies are like an infusion of whatever you take to feel the best possible. Maybe it's relief factor plus Gatorade plus super vitamins or something. The president gets energized by them, and he was on his A game yesterday, and he's right. I got to go back to the Biden quote, which I think this is the stumble that I just can't believe. Cut number one.
As you may remember, I got in trouble when we were running against the senator who was a Mormon, the governor, okay? And I took him on.
The senator who was a Mormon, the governor. Now, I greatly admire Mitt Romney. I helped him edit his campaign book. He's a friend. I think he's a great, great American. I know some of you love him to death, and some of you don't like him very much, but I think he's one of the great guys in American politics. What I can't imagine is running against him and not remembering his name, which is what Joe Biden did. Could not remember his name. Let me do the market report brought to you by Birch Gold. Go to HughGold.com if you want to move some of your retirement funds into the security of physical precious metals. I suggest 10, no more than 25%, but part of your IRA or your Roth. Go to HughGold.com or text my name, Hugh, H-U-G-H, to 474747. I got asked yesterday by a friend, why should I do this? Why not just put it at home? I said, well, you can put it in a, you can buy it from a broker and put it in your safety deposit box. But if you want to put serious money into gold, you don't want to have to lug it around with you whenever you move. You got to store it offsite, whatever. But you can get it all done through Birch Gold via HughGold.com. The market soared yesterday. I mean, just out of it's Amazon Prime plus the rally in the techs. And overseas, it's a little bit lower this morning. But I got to tell you, gold's at 1926, a good starting point. And we'll bring you up to date on where the market is going. It looks like another great day for tech. We'll tell you when we get back. Don't go anywhere. It's a Hugh Hewitt Show. Welcome back, America. It's Hugh Hewitt inside the Beltway. Yesterday, there were long lines of early voters in Georgia. We love to see people out to vote early. Keep America. America.com is a project of the Job Creators Network that sponsors this show, and they want people to vote. They want people to go and vote. I've already voted. Fetching Mrs. Hewitt's already voted. We don't care if you're a Democrat or a Republican or an independent. We want you to get out and vote, and we want you to do it early, so that we don't have confusion on election day and we don't have to wait for a week to find out who won the presidential election or Senate election. Keep America, America.com tells you where to vote, how to vote. It gets you to commit to helping one other person vote. I mean, you can do a little, you can do a lot, but do something. And Keep America, America.com has good, solid, trustworthy information. Proud to bring them to you. Keep America, America.com. There are going to be long lines because a lot of people do want to vote early. And they move pretty quickly. I had to wait in line for probably 5 minutes when I went into my Virginia voting booth. I voted 2 weeks ago. But some states right now, there's early voting in Arizona. Right now, if I was in Arizona, I'd be out there voting for Martha McSally, and I'd be driving everyone I know because she's a great senator. She's a terrific senator, and she's going to win. I don't think Arizona wants to be a blue state. They've already got one blue senator in Kristen Sinema. And I think Martha McSally is out there knocking on doors in Yuma. She's out there knocking on doors in Prescott. She's certainly everywhere in Phoenix, Paradise Valley. Martha McSally is a fighter, and she just destroyed Mark Kelly in that debate. And Mark Kelly has got real problems with the China connection. So just get out and vote early. Keep America, America.com. Now, yesterday, Josh Hawley gave a speech in the Senate Judiciary Committee. I want you to hear the whole thing. I believe that Susan Collins is the most influential senator and gives the most important speeches because she reflects dead center in the Senate. She's a moderate from Maine. She represents dead center in the Senate. There are a handful of Republicans I always listen to because they're so smart. Josh Hawley is one of them, and he spoke for me yesterday. I am an Article 6 subject matter expert, as they say. Wrote a book on Article 6. And Josh Hawley yesterday was singing to this choir, and I want you to hear it all. Cut number 17.
It's good to see you again, Tessie Barrett. Welcome, and to you and to your family as well. I see that some of your children are getting a break. They've earned it, I think. I'm amazed as I've been watching. I've got two little boys at home, my wife and I do. I can't believe how calmly your children have been sitting for a couple of hours. So maybe you can give me some tips, Jesse and Judge, when we're finished here. You know, we've gotten to read a lot about your family in the last few weeks. We've gotten to read a lot about you in the press, and in particular about your religious beliefs. One attack after another in the liberal media, one hit piece after another, many of them echoed by members of this committee, like this one, for instance, Barrett, long active with Insular Christian Group. We've read stories about your Catholic lifestyle, stories about how you raise your children, stories about how you adopted your children, stories about your Catholic doctrinal beliefs, over and over and over questioning whether you have, I guess, the independence to be a judge, a justice on the United States Supreme Court. And it's not just in the newspapers, it's members of this committee, including the Democratic nominee for Vice President of the United States, who has questioned past nominees who have come before this committee about their membership in Catholic fraternal organizations like the Knights of Columbus. And for those watching at home, that's right, you heard me correctly. Senator Harris and others on this committee have repeatedly questioned judicial nominees' fitness for office because of their membership in the Knights of Columbus. The ranking member, when you were last before this committee, Judge, for your initial confirmation hearings, the ranking member referred to your Catholic convictions as dogma, that's a quote, that lives loudly within you, picking up the very terminology of anti-Catholic bigotry current in this country a century ago. She wasn't alone. Other senators on this committee last time asked you if you were an Orthodox Catholic. One senator said she worried that you would be a Catholic judge if you were confirmed because of your religious beliefs. I guess as opposed to an American judge, as if you can't be both a devout Catholic and a loyal American citizen. And it's not just you, Judge. Other nominees who have come before this committee for years now have been asked by my Democrat colleagues over and over their views on sin, their views on the afterlife, their views and about their membership statements of Catholic organizations, about their membership in other Christian organizations, and on and on and on. And let's be clear about what this is. This is an attempt to broach a new frontier, to set up a new standard. Actually, it's an attempt to bring back an old standard that the Constitution of the United States explicitly forbids. I'm talking about a religious test for office. Article 6 of the Constitution of the United States, before we even get to the Bill of Rights, Article 6 of the Constitution of the United States says clearly, and I quote, "No religious test shall ever be required as a qualification to any office or public trust under the United States." Now, that was big news in 1787 when it was written, and it's worth remembering why. It's because no country, no republic in the history of the world had ever guaranteed to its citizens the right to freedom of conscience and religious liberty. Every other country that had ever existed tied together the religious beliefs that would be approved by the powerful and the right to serve in office or to vote or just to be a citizen. In every other country across history, you had to agree with what those in power agreed with in order to hold office or be a citizen in good standing. You had to sign a particular religious confession, or you had to disavow a particular religious group, swear not to follow the Pope, for instance. You had to pledge allegiance to the God of the city or the God of the empire. This was true from 18th century Britain all the way back to ancient Rome. And so when our founders put Article 6 into the Constitution of the United States, they were making a very deliberate choice. They were breaking with all of that past history, and they were saying in America, it would be different. In the United States of America, we would not allow the ruling class to have veto power over your faith, over what Americans believed, over who we gathered with to worship and why and where and how. No, in this country, the people of the United States would be free to follow their own religious convictions, free to worship, free to exercise their religion, and people of faith would be welcome in the public sphere. They'd be welcome there. They'd be welcome without having to get the approval of those in power, like those on this committee. They would be welcome to come and to bring their religious beliefs to bear on their lives, on their office, and all that they do. So long, of course, as they were peaceful citizens who followed the law, religious people of all backgrounds would be welcome in public life. And no person in power would be able to control what the American people, any American citizen, thought or believed or who they worshiped. This freedom of conscience and religious liberty undergirds all of our other rights because it tells the government that it cannot tell us what to think or who we can assemble with or how we can worship or what we can say. And that's why Article 6 is there even before we get to the Bill of Rights and the First Amendment. But this bedrock principle of American liberty is now under attack. That is what is at stake when we read these stories attacking Judge Barrett for her faith. That is what is at stake when my Democratic colleagues repeatedly question Judge Barrett and many other judicial nominees about their religious beliefs, about their religious membership, about their religious practices, about their family beliefs and practices. That is an attempt to bring back the days of the religious test. That is an attempt to bring back the veto power of the powerful over the religious beliefs and sincerely held convictions of the American people. And that is what is at stake in this confirmation hearing. Judge Barrett is a Catholic. We all know that. She's a devout Catholic. We all know that. She and her husband have chosen to raise their family according to their Catholic beliefs in faithful fellowship with other Catholics. We all know that. Heck, 65 million Americans are Catholics, and many, many, many millions more are Christians of other persuasions. Are they to be told that they cannot serve in public office, that they are not welcome in the public sphere unless the members of this committee sign off on their religious beliefs? I, for one, do not want to live in such an America, and the Constitution of the United States flatly prohibits it. Now, the Constitution says the people of faith, like Judge Barrett, are welcome in high office, welcome in any office, welcome throughout our public life here in this country. And I would just say to my Democrat colleagues that these years now, this pattern and practice, as we say in the law, this pattern and practice of religious bigotry, because that's what it is. When you tell somebody that they're too Catholic to be on the bench, when you tell them they're going to be a Catholic judge, not an American judge, that's bigotry. The pattern and practice of bigotry from members of this committee must stop. And I would expect that it be renounced. Now, I just heard my colleague, Senator Coons, make a reference to an old case, the Griswold case, which I can only assume is another hit at Judge Barrett's religious faith, referring to Catholic doctrinal beliefs. I don't know what else it could be, since no one has challenged this case. It's not a live issue and hasn't been for decades. This is the kind of thing I'm talking about, and this is the sort of attacks that must stop. I look forward, Judge Barrett, to getting to the chance to speak with you further about your legal credentials, about your legal views, about your approach to the law and your judicial philosophy. But I hope that one thing that this confirmation process will stand for in the end, I hope when we look back at the confirmation hearings for Judge Amy Barrett, soon I hope to be Justice Amy Barrett, one thing we will say is that was the time, that was the year that the attempt to bring back religious tests for office was finally stopped.
Bravo, Senator Josh Hawley. Now, you might not know, he clerked for Chief Justice John Roberts. He's the former Attorney General of Missouri. Mrs. Hawley didn't raise a dummy. Josh Hawley is very smart, but he's also passionate and he's informed. And he defended religious liberty yesterday the way I do often, because the stain on this country from religious bigotry, like the stain on this country from slavery and from racial bigotry and ethnic bigotry, is large in our history, but is gone now. Thank God. Now, I'm not ashamed of the gospel. I'm an evangelical Christian, but I happen to always say I'm an evangelical Presbyterian Roman Catholic. Evangelical Roman Catholic Presbyterian is how I put it. That doesn't make me a Lutheran. That means I go to Mass on Saturday and I go to the Presbyterian Church with the Fetching Mrs. Hewitt on Sunday. There's one river with two banks and I use both of them. And that's just me, but there are a lot of people like me. You know who protects me? Alliance Defending Freedom. They're probably going to get dragged today. But when you hear Alliance Defending, because Amy Coney Barrett has addressed, as I have for many years, the Blackstone Fellows, a program, the Alliance Defending Freedom, step up and defend them. Over at HughHewitt.com, at the very top of the page, you will see a banner that says, "Will you fight for your freedom? Give now." That's asking you to give money to Alliance Defending Freedom, the greatest legal defense fund in America right now, protecting people of conscience, protecting free speech, protecting you. Please give generously, especially when you hear them attack today. Come right back to the Hugh Hewitt Show. Welcome back, America. Hugh Hewitt inside the Beltway. Chairman Graham, Lindsey Graham of South Carolina, running a very, very good hearing. Eventually, they did get to Amy Coney Barrett yesterday. Judge Barrett, I'll play a few bits of her remarks, but let's listen to Cut 22 when she finally got to speak after hearing all of the senators talk.
And with appreciation for those who have come before me. I was 9 years old when Sandra Day O'Connor became the first woman to sit in this seat. She was a model of grace and dignity throughout her distinguished tenure on the court. When I was 21 years old and just beginning my career, Ruth Bader Ginsburg sat in this seat. She told the committee, "What has become of me could only happen in America." I have been nominated to fill Justice Ginsburg's seat, but no one will ever take her place. I will be forever grateful for the path she marked and the life she led. If confirmed, it would be the honor of a lifetime to serve alongside the Chief Justice and 7 Associate Justices. I admire them all and would consider each a valued colleague. And I might bring a few new perspectives to the bench. As the President noted when he announced my nomination, I would be the first mother of school-aged children to serve on the court. And I know that it would make Senators Young and Braun happy to know that I would be the first justice to join the court from the Seventh Circuit in 45 years. I would be the only sitting justice who didn't attend school at Harvard or Yale, but I am confident that Notre Dame could hold its own, and maybe I could even teach them a thing or two about football. As a final note, Mr. Chairman, I would like to thank the many Americans from all walks of life who have reached out with messages of support over the course of my nomination. I believe in the power of prayer, and it has been uplifting to hear that so many people are praying for me. I look forward to answering the committee's questions over the coming days. And if I am fortunate enough to be confirmed, I pledge to faithfully and impartially discharge my duties to the American people as an Associate Justice of the Supreme Court. Thank you.
Powerful opening statement yesterday. There were some other great statements. Senator Mike Crapo, cut number 20.
In September 2017, Judge Amy Coney Barrett came before the Senate Judiciary Committee, this committee, after being nominated to the U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals for the Seventh Circuit. During that hearing, she repeatedly expressed her commitment to independent and unbiased decision-making. I was proud to support her confirmation to the Court of Appeals in both the committee and on the Senate floor. Judge Barrett's remarkable resume shows she is a pioneer in the legal field. She will be the fifth woman and the first mother of school-aged children to serve on the Supreme Court. In many ways, she's the ideal candidate to fill this current vacancy. Mr. Chairman, I look forward to hearing more from the nominee about her experience and her judicial philosophy. The next few days will prove invaluable as we discuss with Judge Barrett at length the proper role of a judge in our legal system. I look forward to this hearing. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
And then let's hear Ben Sass, cut number 16.
Originalism, also known as textualism, is basically the old idea from eighth grade civics that judges don't get to make laws. Judges just apply them. An originalist comes to the court with a fundamental humility and modesty about what the job is that they're there to do. An originalist doesn't think of herself as a super legislator whose opinions will be read by angels from stone tablets in heaven. Judicial activism, on the other hand, is the bad idea that judges' black robes are just fake, and truthfully, they're wearing red or blue partisan jerseys under there. We should reject all such judges. And so today, when we have a nominee before us, we should be asking her questions that are not about trying to predetermine how certain cases will be judged. And a final term that we should be clear about, I mentioned earlier, but I think it's worth underscoring, is we should underscore what is court packing. Court packing is the idea that we should blow up our shared civics, that we should end the deliberative structure of the Senate by making it just another majoritarian body for the purposes of packing the Supreme Court. Court packing would depend on the destruction of the full debate here in the Senate, and it is a partisan suicide bombing that would end the deliberative structure of the United States Senate and make this job less interesting for all 100 of us. Not for 47 or 53, because it's hard to get to a supermajority that tries to protect the American people from 51, 49, 49, 51 swings all the time. What blowing up the filibuster would ultimately do is try to turn the Supreme Court into the ultimate super legislature. Court packing is not judicial reform, as some of you who wrote the memo over the weekend got a lot of media to bite on. Court packing is destroying the system we have now. It is not reforming the system we have now. And anybody who uses that the language that implies filling legitimate vacancies is actually just another form of court packing. That's playing the American people for fools. And the American people actually want a Washington, D.C. that depoliticizes more decisions, not politicizes more decisions. So, Judge, I'm glad that you're before us. I'm looking forward to hearing your opening statement later today, and I look forward to the questioning you have to endure over the next 2 or 3 days, even though you probably look forward to it a little bit less.
Senator Sasse was great yesterday. They all were. On the Republican side, I will be talking to 5 Republican senators, 3 of them members of the Judiciary Committee, in the next 2 hours. So before the hearing reconvenes. So whatever you do, don't go anywhere except the Hugh Hewitt Show. Hi, Hugh Hewitt for ReliefFactor.com. If you are in pain and you want out of pain, well, you need to talk to the people that get it done. Pete and Seth Talbot, the father-son owners of ReliefFactor.com. They tell me that sometimes whole families can be helped when one member of the family gets out of pain. For example, finally, a married couple gets to sleep through the night again when one isn't tossing and turning with a terrible back. That's why Pete and Seth created the 3-week quick start, so you can find out if those people are you. For about $1 a day, you can see if you can get out of pain, and after that, lessen the cost of a cup of coffee a week to stay out of pain. The 3-week quick start is like a trial pack, and it can be at your door in about 2 to 3 days. Let's face it, getting older, exercise, even everyday living can create discomfort, pain. You don't order Relief Factor just for yourself. Order it for your wife, your husband, your family, your friends. They miss the old you, too. 3-week quick start at ReliefFactor.com or call 800-500-8384. 800-500-8384.